Everybody wants to be great at something, right? Right? Y'all, everyone wants to be great at something. My big moment came in high school. In my senior year of high school, I played lacrosse. I grew up in North Carolina, Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and it was a while ago, but they still had lacrosse. And the schools I went to junior high and senior high, they were more cutting edge. And there weren't many teams in the state that played it, but our teams did. So from like sixth grade on, I played lacrosse, but I wasn't really good at a lot of things in junior high or high school. I wasn't like great at academics. I didn't make straight A's or anything like that. I wasn't really that great at sports. I mean, I was okay. I was decent, but I wasn't great at anything in particular. I wasn't great at art or music or anything creative. Like, I wasn't the funky creative kid that's like the genius and when it comes to that kind of stuff. I wasn't the most popular kid. It was like I was always searching for one, and you know, we all just want to be great at something. And for me, my moment came senior year of high school. I was a starting midfielder. So again, I was decent at lacrosse, but not great. But I made the starting squad. And on our first game of the season, we opened against, I'll still remember it, Upper Arlington High from Ohio. So if you know anything, did anyone play lacrosse growing up? Nobody. All right, one person. All right. If you know anything about lacrosse, they don't really play it much in the South. And North Carolina is still South. I don't care what people tell you, but it is. They don't play it much. And so whenever you play a team from the North, from Maryland, New York, Long Island, or even Ohio, that's kind of North, you're usually going to get creamed. Like, that's just the way it goes. Because they eat, you know, live and breathe lacrosse up in the North. And so the first game of our season, we're playing against this team from Ohio that's coming down to play against us. And I still remember it. You know, it's dark. It's Friday night. The lights are, you know, shining. The crowds are there because it was a pretty big deal at our school. And we're here to open up against Upper Arlington High. And we knew we were probably going to get blown out. But sure enough, by the end of the game, there's like 1 or 2 minutes left, and we're only down 4-3. So we've held our own. We're hanging in there. We're still in the game. And, you know, everything we can do to try to score and to try to pull off some sort of crazy victory, you know, it's on everyone's minds. And if the way lacrosse works, if you know, in the last minute of the game, the referee comes out on the field and keeps time. And so the referee actually comes out and starts calling out. And so it's getting to the end of the game, and I'm on the field because, again, I was starting. And so so we're down at our end of the field, and we're trying to do everything we can to score. This is my old still CHHS, Chapel Hill High School Tigers. Welcome to the Jungle was our theme song coming into the field. Come on. You remember those GNR days. So we're doing everything we can to score, and I can hear it in my mind, 20, like the referee's calling out, 20, 19, 18. And on the right side of the field, one of my friends takes a shot, and it bounces off the cage, or the goal. That's kind of what's called in lacrosse. It bounces off the post and comes straight towards me. And so I scoop it up. I've got the ball like this, and it's just me. And there's one defender between me and the goalie. And so he's coming straight at me, and I'm cradling, I'm chewing across, and he's got the ball. And he comes up, and he's going for my stick. And right when I get in front of him, I pull what's called a face dodge, where you pull your stick right in front of his face, and you sort of blow right past him. And it's a pretty standard move, but I don't know where I pulled it out of. I don't know how I did it. It wasn't something I practiced. I guess it was second nature. I had never done it before. It had never worked that well before. But for whatever reason, he went for my stick. I pulled a face dodge, went right by him, and I'm wide open. It's just me and the goalie. So I shoot, bottom right corner. Next thing you know, the crowds go wild. My teammates pile on top of me, send the game into overtime. We scored in overtime. We won the game. It's like this huge victory. It was our first victory, obviously, this season on our way to. We played the state championship that year. I'll never forget coming off the field that night. The coach is walking by me, and you know everybody's piling on. It's this huge moment. Coach is walking by me. He's like, "Hey, Herbst, you know, great shot. Great shot." For me, that was like my moment. Great. I mean, it's the scenario that every kid dreams of, or at least every boy kid dreams of. Like, you're in sports, the ball, you know, the game's on the line, the ball's in your hands or whatever, and you have the shot to, you know, send the game to victory or overtime or whatever. That's like the moment you dream of as a kid. Now, here's the reality. I think most of us still dream of sort of moments like we want to be great at something. And maybe it's not sports anymore. Maybe it's not, you know, being the most popular kid in school or whatever. But we still want to be great at something. I mean, don't we? Don't we all desire to be great at something? I mean, you know, some of you are in business, without singling anyone out. Maybe you're a hotel manager, George Fisher. And you want to be the greatest hotel manager, don't you? I mean, you want to be the best at what you can do. You want to go to conferences. You want other hotel managers around the country to look at you and say, man, you run your hotel perfect. Like, it is the perfect hotel because of the way you manage it and things you do. If you're a teacher, you want to be the best teacher. Like, you want to be known in your school as the teacher who cares the most about your students. You teach the best. You know the best, most about your subject. Whatever business you're in, if you're a student, I mean, you want to be the best at that. Most of us do, don't we? I mean, nobody grows up and says, you know, I want to be average. Like, I want to be mediocre. Like, I just want to get by in life. Like, I want my kids to grow up average. Like, nobody says that. You know, we want to, if you're a parent, you want to raise your kids to be the best kids they can be. You want them to be great at something. That's what we all dream about. Is there something that we can be great at? And I think it begs a question that we should ask tonight, and that's this. If we all want to be great at something, does being great at something necessarily make you great? In other words, if you become great at something, does that make you great? Because you see, we've all probably know of examples of people that we would say are great at something. They're great at entertaining. They're great at sports. They're great at what they do. They're great at a specific skill. They're great at gardening. They're great at cooking. They're great at their business, whatever. But you get to know that person a little bit better, and you begin to realize they're not really that great of a person. I mean, think about the people we idolize. Think about the people in sports. Tiger Woods, Kobe Bryant, you know. Fill in your favorite sports hero, where you look at them and you say, you know what, they are the greatest in their field. They're the best at what they do. In fact, they're maybe the greatest in the country, maybe the greatest in the world at what they do. And then you read an article about them or you learn more about who they are and what they're like, and you say, you know what, they're not really that great of a person. Or think about actors and actresses. You know, we go see a movie or film, and you watch somebody on film, you say, man, they nailed that role. Like, they were, I mean, they performed it as perfectly as they could perform it. They are great at what they do. And yet you learn a little bit more about them, and you say, they're really not that great. Or some of us have probably worked with people like that. You begin working with someone, and they, you know, bring in all the sales numbers every quarter. They're great. You know, boss, it seems like they run the company well. They're really great at what they do. And then the more you get to know that person, the more you work underneath them and you're around them every day, you say, they're not really that great. It's because being great at something doesn't necessarily make somebody great. And see, the flip side is true as well, because all of us have probably known people in our lives that we would say aren't necessarily great at something specific. But you get to know them and you say, man, they're a great person. I mean, you might even point to your parents, maybe your mom or your dad, and say, well, I don't know if they were like great at one thing specific, like the best in the world or the best in their industry or the best in their field, but they were great. Or maybe it was a friend, or maybe it was a teacher you had where you said they weren't like the best teacher in the world, but the way they poured into me, it impacted my life, and they were a great person. And again, what we realize is just because you're great at something doesn't necessarily make you a great person. You can be a great person without being great at something. Now, we're in the middle of this series called Last Words. And what we're doing is we're looking at the last things that Jesus shared with his followers before he went to the cross. So that last week of his life, he knew that things were coming to a head, and he knew he only had a few minutes, a few days left with his followers, and so he knew that the things that he shared with them, those last few days of his life, had better be the most important things he could talk about. And I'm guessing this subject of greatness was probably one of those things he knew he needed to talk to his followers about. Because think about it. He knew that it was only going to be a matter of days before these handful of men and women were going to be the people that would carry his mission to the world. Like, these were going to be the leaders of the church that he was starting. These were the people that were going to launch the movement that he was starting. And it was all up to them. That he was going to be gone at some point very soon, and he was going to leave it in their hands. And so he knew these better be great people. And so what we find in Luke chapter 22, that's what we're going to read from tonight. If you want to turn there in your Bible, you can. But what we find is at the very end of that last week of his life, before he went to the cross, there's one night, and it was actually the day before he went to the cross, where he gathered his followers around and he shared this meal with them. And we now call that the Last Supper. And actually next week, we're going to talk a little bit more about that. But he shared this meal with them. And then after the meal, he didn't even have to bring the subject up because his followers themselves began discussing what it means to be somebody who's great. And look at what they said in Luke chapter 22, starting in verse 24. It says this, a dispute... Again, this is right after the Last Supper. It says, a dispute also arose among them as to which of them was considered to be the greatest. You see, Jesus' followers weren't that much different than us. They began arguing and discussing, how can I be the greatest? Who in this room, out of us 12, and there might have been more than that in that room that night, we don't know for certain, but out of us small group of people, who's going to be the greatest, you think? And this was an important discussion for them because here's what they believed. And we said this the last few times we've gathered. They believed that Jesus was probably the Messiah. And in their minds, what that meant was that he was like the absent king. And he had come secretly among his people. And any day he was going to throw off, you know, this secret, and he was going to pronounce himself and declare himself as king to the people. He was going to raise up an army. He was going to throw off the Romans, because at that time Israel was ruled by Rome and they didn't really have a king. But they believed that Jesus was going to raise up. He was going to raise up an army, throw off the Romans. He was going to reestablish this government and reestablish this kingdom in Israel. And all throughout Jesus' ministry, he had been saying and talking about this thing called a kingdom. And so every time he talked about it, they kind of thought, are we getting closer to that moment? Are we getting closer to that moment when Jesus is going to finally declare himself king? And guess what? When he does that, what does that mean? It means we're like his right-hand men. Like, we're like the closest people to Jesus. So they're starting to argue this night, who's going to be like the head people when Jesus declares himself king and brings his kingdom? Like, who's going to be the person that's like, you know, general of the army? Because they remember the Old Testament. There are all these great generals in the Israelite army. And so they probably wonder, who's going to be the general of the army? Who's going to be like Secretary of the Treasury and Secretary of the State? And like, who's going to be in his cabinet? And who's going to be the people that are going to lead Jesus' government? And so in their minds, that's what it meant to be greatest. Like, Jesus is about to do this thing. We feel like it's getting closer and closer. And so, like, and we don't know if this, like, broke out in one corner of the room or where it happened. But they began asking the question, like, is John, is he going to be the greatest, you know, in this room? Is it going to be Peter? Like, is it going to be Andrew? Is it going to be James? Who's going to be the greatest? And Jesus gets wind of this dispute, this conversation that's going on. And look at how he responds to them. It says in the next verse, it says, Jesus said to them, the kings of the Gentiles lord it over them, and those who exercise authority over them call themselves benefactors. In other words, Jesus responds by saying, well, let's stop for a moment and ask how our culture defines greatness. Let's look at the people in charge in our culture. The kings of the Gentiles, they're the people that are in charge. And in that time, Gentile just meant non-Jewish person. So somebody that wasn't a Jewish person. So he says, think about like the Roman emperor, the you know, Caesar Augustus, or whoever was the emperor at that time. Think about the Roman emperor or the governors or the people that are in charge. How is it that they've become great? And how do they measure greatness? Well, they lead with an iron fist. Like, they rule over other people. They lord their authority over others. And in fact, they call themselves benefactors. Now, this is sort of a strange word. It's actually the only time in the whole Bible that this word, benefactors, is used. And it was a title in that day. It was a term that people used to refer to somebody in power that benefits from other people underneath them who serve them. And so these kings of the Gentiles, these rulers, the people in power, the people that were considered great in that day were people who threw their weight around. They bossed people around. They made other people serve them. They lorded their authority over other people. These kind of people saw the world really in two different ways. There were those in power, and then there were those who served those in power. And the few that got into power were the greatest. And the people who served those were the least, and they were underneath, and they were the people that served the people who were great. And so Jesus says that's how they define. Like, if we're going to talk about greatness, let's take a look at them. How is it that these people in our culture lead? How do they define greatness? And then he draws a huge contrast. Look at what he says in the next verse. He says, but you are not to be like that. Instead, the greatest among you should be like the youngest, and the one who rules like the one who serves. For who is greater, the one who is at the table or the one who serves? Is it not the one who is at the table? But I am among you as one who serves. In other words, Jesus is saying, we shouldn't measure greatness the way other people measure it. That the greatest people, the most important people, the people with the highest status, the people who are sort of ruling, those kind of people are not necessarily the greatest people. If you want to be somebody who's great, then you need to be somebody who is like the youngest. Now, it's interesting that Jesus says this because in that time, people had really big families. They usually had lots of sons and daughters. Some of you know that experience. And you know that if there's lots of sons and daughters, usually the youngest, you know, in the whole family is sort of on the short end of everything. The youngest is considered, in that culture, the youngest was considered almost like the least important. The least out of everyone, the youngest was the one who had to do all the chores that they pushed on. The youngest was the one who had the smallest inheritance. The youngest out of everyone was just considered the least, the most, or the least important out of everyone. And so Jesus says, look, if you want to be great, don't measure it in how great you are at certain things that make you better than everybody else. If you want to be somebody that's great, then you need to make yourself like the youngest, or like the least, or like the person who has the least status, or like the person who actually serves everyone else. You want to be great? You need to become like a servant. Now, what's a servant? How would you define servant if you had to? Anybody? How'd you define servant? What's that? Hired help, yep. Anything else? Humility? Yeah. Adept humility, yeah. Yeah, it's a servant is somebody who basically serves other people. They execute the plans of other people. That someone comes along and says, here's my plans, here's my desires, and then the servant executes those plans and desires. Sometimes they get paid for it, sometimes they don't, depending on the position they're in, but that's what a servant does. A servant is there to execute the plans and desires of someone else. And all of a sudden, Jesus begins to teach us in this short little passage, as he's talking to his followers who are arguing about who's going to be the greatest and what it means to be the greatest, he says, look, you want to be great? You need to be somebody who serves other people. You need to be somebody who actually executes the plans and desires
of other people. Rather than putting your own plans and desires on other people, rather than thinking about what you can be great at and better at than other people, you want to be great? You need to be somebody who serves other people. Now, what's interesting is Jesus doesn't he doesn't condemn their desires to be great. Like when this dispute arose and they're talking, and again, we don't know if it started in a corner of the room and then Jesus sort of got wind of it. He doesn't stop and say, hold on. You guys are having the wrong conversation. Like you're focused on the wrong things. You should not desire to be great. Like he never does that. In fact, he affirms it. And he actually says, look, it's not a bad thing if you want to be great. Like that's a good desire. We all have that desire. There's something inside each one of us that has that desire, and that is right and that is good. And so if you want to be great, let me tell you how to be great. And he says, bottom line, it's about serving other people. Now, he wraps up by then encouraging them, because he knows this might be hard for them to hear because they're expecting and thinking about what position and what title they're going to have in this new government and this new kingdom, how they're going to be better than everyone else, how all the people of Israel will start looking to them and saying, man, he is so great at that. He's in charge and he's a leader and all that. That's what they're thinking. And so Jesus wraps up by giving them a little bit of encouragement. He says, right after he told them this, he says in verse 28, he says, you are those, he's talking to the disciples here, you are those who have stood by me in my trials. And I confer on you a kingdom, just as my Father conferred one on me, so that you may eat and drink at my table in my kingdom and sit on thrones judging the 12 tribes of Israel. Now, we don't know exactly what Jesus meant here. And again, in their minds, they might have not known exactly what he meant, because they're still trying to figure out, what does this kingdom look like? And you keep talking about Jesus, but I don't think the kingdom you're talking about fits the same expectations that I have of what a kingdom means. But he basically ends by saying, look, hang in there. Like, you've walked with me now for 3 years, and you've hung in there. You've stood by me. You've seen this opposition rise to me. You've seen some people, they don't like what I have to say. They don't like the way that I'm presenting God, especially the religious people. Like the religious people are the ones that actually don't like me the most. But you've hung in there with me. You've stayed by me. And if you persevere and if you embrace this new definition of greatness, because I've given you a lot of new definitions along the road, I've told you a lot of new things. And if you'll stay with me and if you'll embrace this new definition of greatness, then I promise you'll be rewarded. You will become great. You will share in this kingdom and in this reward and in this desire to be great that you have. You will be rewarded as long as you focus not on what you can be great at, not how you can be great at things over other people, but if you focus on what it simply means to be great. So what does this mean for you? And what does it mean for me? I think it means if you're somebody that's in business, that instead of asking the question, how can I be the greatest business person? How can I be the greatest boss? How can I be the greatest whatever it is you do? Maybe you need to ask a different question. How can I just be great? And if being great means serving other people, how can I do that better? What would it look like in my job tomorrow if I woke up and went to my job and said, how can I execute the plans and desires of other people? Because if I do that, then at least in God's eyes, at least according to what Jesus says, that's what will make me great. Maybe you're someone who wants to be a great parent. You want to be a great mom or a great dad. I think we need to ask the question, what does it just mean to be great? It means that I'll probably go home and I'll ask, how can I serve my children? Even though they're only 3 years old, and even though sometimes I question their plans and their motives and everything they think, how can I serve them? How can I be someone that's there to serve them? Because if I take that approach, and if I just say, how can I be a great person, then I'll serve them. And that'll make me a great dad. That'll make me a great mom. And you want to be a great student? You want to be a great neighbor? You want to be a great friend? You want to be a great teacher? You want to be great at anything? I think we need to stop and ask the question, well, how can I just be great? Now, let me be honest. I think this definition of being great at serving other people is really, really hard. Because we all still have goals and desires and ambitions to be great at specific things. I'm personally thinking about going back to school in a few months. And if I do that, I want to make great grades. There's something in me, and I know some of you, Quinn, you're laughing right now because you don't care about grades. But some of us do, Quinn, no. But it's true. Some of us have desires about specific things, and you have this warped mind, and I need to make straight A's, and if I don't make straight A's, and what are people going to think about me? And if I have one bad grade on my thing, and it's going to screw everything up, and it's going to make me feel terrible and all that. And there's something inside of me that wants to be great at it. I'm a church planter, and me and Stephen and Jason planted or started this church several months ago. And there's something inside of us, or I'll speak for myself at least, there's something inside of me that wants to be a great, you know, pastor or church planter. Like, in church world, we also go to these conferences, and we meet with other pastors and talk to other church leaders and church planters. And, you know, it's always like, how are things going? And everything in me wants to say, well, we started this church from scratch, you know, and 2 years later, like 500 people come in and we're doing all these things for the neighborhood and all these amazing things are happening. And basically what I'm saying is I want people to know me as like a great church planter. And I don't want to go to conferences and say, well, we're still kind of doing this. And if by all the ways the world would measure things, I'm probably just an average church planter. Like, I have those desires. And yet I think what Jesus is saying and what God is saying is those desires aren't necessarily wrong. But in my eyes, you know how I measure greatness? It's not by what kind of grades you make. That's important, but that's not how I measure greatness. It's not by how many people are coming to your church. That's important, but that's not how I measure greatness. It's not by how many sales you made this quarter. It's not by, you know, how well your new business that you started is doing. Those are important, but that's not how I measure greatness. I want to know, are you being faithful every day at just serving other people around you? At loving other people? At submitting your desires and your wills to them and saying, how can I help you execute your plans and your desires? But that's tough because I want to be the guy that makes the goal at the end of the game and all the crowds cheer, you know, and that's great. You know, I read the Bible and I want to be like David, you know, comes out with a slingshot and kills Goliath and all the crowds go crazy. And like, that's what I think of when I think of greatness. But Jesus taught a different way. And then you know what? Jesus modeled a different way. Because right after he told his disciples how they can be great by serving others, you know what he did? We actually read, we're not going to read the story, but the book of John tells us right after he did this, he went and he grabbed a towel and he grabbed a big bowl of water. And he went around the room and he started washing the disciples' feet. Like they're muddy, smelly, dusty. They didn't wear shoes back then. They've been walking on the road, dusty roads to Jerusalem. They've been traveling all the way from Galilee to Jerusalem for Passover. And they came to dinner that night. And you know who washed people's feet? Servants did. You hired slaves to do that. And we don't know why there wasn't a slave or a servant there that night. We don't know why their feet were still dirty. But right after Jesus taught them about how to be great, he took a towel, he took a bowl of water, and he went around and he washed all of their feet. This is like the Son of God. Somebody that the Bible says all authority had been given to, all greatness, all ability to rule, all ability to be over everybody else. And he said, no, let me show you how to really be great. It's about serving other people. So what will we do this week? Would you maybe consider just waking up tomorrow morning and asking the question to yourself? Hey, just take like a minute and say, how can I be great today? Like, how can I serve other people? Who are the other people I'm going to interact with today at work or at school, or I'm meeting so-and-so for lunch, or I'm going to talk to so-and-so on the phone later today or whatever? How can I serve them? How can I love them? How can I help execute their plans? Because when you do that, when I do that, that's when we'll really be great. Let me close this in a word of prayer before we wrap up. Father God, thank you so much for Jesus and the way he modeled this. Lord, we all desire to be great, and I think that's just part of the image of God you put in each one of us. And so I pray you would make us great business people and great students and great teachers and great parents and great sons and daughters and great at the things we do. But Lord, help us not to be consumed by those pursuits. I know I've been impacted, and I'm guessing everyone in this room has been impacted by people in their lives who are simply great, who loved us unconditionally, who served us, who were there to encourage us. Lord, may we be those people as well. May we serve and help and be there for others that you've put in our lives. We pray all this in your name. Amen. That's it tonight. So you are now dismissed. Before you go, let me say this. Jason talked about it before, Easter egg hunt. We're really excited about this. We moved in this neighborhood, as he said, about a month ago, and we really haven't done much here. We've just been kind of getting a lay of the land and getting settled into this building and learning what it's like to be here and be present in this neighborhood. And so this is the first thing we're doing to try to serve the neighborhood and just be there. And so help us do that. Invite people that you know that live around here. Tell them to bring their kids. I think we have like 2,000 or 3,000 eggs, so there's plenty to go around. So if you can help us out, do that. If not, thanks for coming. That's it. You're dismissed.